From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudat, and this is Idaho Matters. It was a bad year for the Colorado River. The long drought in the Southwest grew worse, and demand for the river's water continued to outstrip supply. States have been scrambling to find some compromise and to cut back on demand before 2026. That's when the current guidelines for the river expire. But climate change is only making that job harder, shrinking supplies with no end in sight. KUNC's Alex Hager reports for the Mountain West News Bureau.
The Colorado River starts here, deep in the mountains of the state that shares its name. Nearly 60% of the river is born as snow in the Colorado Rockies. In January, under tall conifers with his feet buckled into skis, Stephen Jowen with the Natural Resources Conservation Service trekked out into the woods to measure it. He works on the front lines of an alarming trend.
When I first started 15 years ago, you know, we'd actually measure some snow in the last, in the April-May survey. And a lot of times now we just walk in and there's no snow.
Long-term climate patterns show a trend of warming and drying. That means less snow where it matters most, and when it does fall, it's melting quicker and getting soaked up by dry soil before it can reach the river. All of that is creating urgent problems. This year, water levels in America's two biggest reservoirs, both on the Colorado, Lake Mead and Lake Powell, hit all-time lows. That threatens their ability to generate hydropower, which millions of Americans depend on. For the first time since the 60s, dropping levels could force operators to shut off hydropower turbines as early as next summer. Deep inside the concrete dam at Lake Powell, the turbines continue humming for now, but manager Bob Martin is worried.
Anybody in hydropower, you know, their whole career is based on reliability of these units. So to come into a power plant being quiet would be very, very disturbing for me.
Water leaders have assembled a patchwork of band-aids to stave off catastrophe, but they haven't reached a deal that would significantly reduce water demand. This summer, the federal agency that manages Western Water threatened to force cutbacks. Camille Kalin-Limtutin leads that agency. In June, she called on states to conserve an unprecedented amount and gave them 2 months to come up with a plan.
Between 2 and 4 million acre-feet of additional conservation is needed just to protect critical levels in 2023.
That's about as much as the entire state of Colorado draws from the river most years. The request sent a seismic shock through the 7 states that share water from the river, but it didn't pull them together to make a deal. The deadline passed, but there were no forced cutbacks. And the states are still caught in a standoff, pointing fingers at each other, reluctant to make hard sacrifices of their own. Becky Mitchell is Colorado's top river negotiator.
We all have to be able to sell this, and it is really hard to sell something when there are winners and losers.
Experts say dropping water levels and the struggle to cut back mean big changes needed across huge swaths of the country. Sarah Dant is a professor of history at Weber State University in Utah.
I think it's also this very stark and obvious indication that we have so long not understood the power of aridity.
Dant says nature is winning out in places where conditions are too dry to sustain life as we know it. Climate change is making dry places even drier. Even John Wesley Powell, the Colorado River explorer for whom Lake Powell is named, warned that the West would never be as green as the East.
But nobody wanted to pay attention to him because, you know, let's gung-ho, boom, boom, here we go, let's settle. And we've been putting off this reckoning with aridity for a long time now.
States are scrambling to find some compromise and cut back on demand before 2026 when the current guidelines for the river expire. But climate change is only making that job harder, shrinking supplies with no end in sight. I'm Alex Hager.
So just how bad is the water problem on the Colorado? New forecasts for the river paint a grim picture. Climate change and steady demand are shrinking the water supply for 40 million people, and that's threatening hydropower generation at the nation's largest dams. KUNC's Alex Hager takes a trip inside the Glen Canyon Dam and reports for the Mountain West News Bureau.
The year is 1963. It's the middle of the space race. America is expanding and building at a breakneck pace. In the Colorado River Basin, that means controlling the water.
The story of winning the great American West has been essentially a story of its dams.
This archival footage from the Bureau of Reclamation zooms in on northern Arizona, right near the Utah border.
It's the Glen Canyon Dam, which, on completion, will be the second highest dam in the United States, fourth largest concrete structure in the world, and one of the greatest construction projects of the 20th century.
For decades, the dam has held up to its lofty reputation. It produces hydropower for about 5 million people in 7 states. It holds back Lake Powell, a huge reservoir, which helps keep taps flowing in major cities hundreds of miles away. But now, dropping water levels are threatening all of that. And Bob Martin sees it up close.
This is all original. So this is like pulling your grandpa's 1964 Cadillac out of the garage, and it's in the same condition it was in 1964.
Martin is standing in front of a giant electric turbine, which he manages for reclamation. It feels like the inside of a submarine, with hulking steel fittings and an imposing column of spinning metal. Drought and steady demand have shrunk Lake Powell to record lows, threatening the water supply that spins those turbines.
Anybody in hydropower, you know, their whole career is based on reliability of these units. So to come into a power plant being quiet would be very, very disturbing for me.
But that silence could become a reality. If water levels get a little lower, air bubbles would get into the turbines and cause serious damage. Some projections show water getting so low, it wouldn't be able to pass through the dam normally, instead relegated to little-used backup tubes near the bottom. Kyle Rohrink is director of the Great Basin Water Network.
The architects of the dam never expected us to be at this precipice.
The latest forecasts show water dropping to those backup pipes as soon as this summer. If that happens, it would mean the end of hydropower. To avoid that, federal officials may ratchet back the amount of water flowing downstream, which would leave much less water flowing through the Grand Canyon and down to cities like Los Angeles and Phoenix. All of these critical milestones have quickly gone from hypothetical to possible and even likely. Rohrink says decisions made over the next couple of years will be pivotal.
How do we rewrite the wrongs of the past? And how do we ensure a stable future for our fellow Americans, tribes, and folks in Mexico as well?
The current river crisis, the one that's already forced cutbacks to some water allocations, Sarah Dant says it's a sign of something bigger.
I think it's also this very stark and obvious indication that we have so long not understood the power of aridity.
Dant is a historian at Utah's Weber State University. She says nature is winning out in places where conditions are too dry to sustain life as we know it. Climate change is making dry places even drier. Even John Wesley Powell, the explorer for whom Lake Powell is named, warned that the West would never be as green as the East.
But nobody wanted to pay attention to him because, you know, let's gung-ho, boom, boom, here we go, let's settle. And we've been putting off this reckoning with aridity for a long time now.
The consequences of that mindset are finally coming home to roost, and Glen Canyon Dam may be one of the first big casualties.
At Glen Canyon, the drama of the Colorado River unfolds, an important and noble venture for all Americans.
I'm Alex Hager.
So we know the Colorado River is in crisis, and policymakers met in Las Vegas a few weeks ago to talk about its future. But they didn't come out with any new commitments to cut back demand. And that leaves hydropower facilities in jeopardy at the nation's largest reservoirs, and it leaves a murky picture of the river's future. Water managers say the next few weeks will be critical. They're trying to act before the federal government changes the current rulebook for water usage. KUNC's Alex Hager reports for the Mountain West News Bureau.
There's no shortage of tension in the Colorado River Basin. The cities and farms that rely on the river's water need to start using less. And those who decide how it gets divvied up are caught in a standoff. In a Las Vegas casino conference center, that all went down in person.
There's no substitute for, you know, being face-to-face. It's a lot easier to talk a little smack, call some people some names, you know, when you're not looking them in the eye.
That's John Ensminger, head of the Southern Nevada Water Authority. Here at Caesar's Palace, people from Wyoming to Mexico are gathered to get a sense of the river's future. And the word on everyone's lips is collaboration. Colorado's head river negotiator, Becky Mitchell, says there needs to be a collective solution to this collective problem.
I think there's some heavy optimism that hopefully everyone will come to something that we can all agree on, but it is going to take mean real cuts to everyone.
Agreement is easier said than done. Mitchell herself placed blame downstream. States along the river's top half, Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, and New Mexico, say their water supply is at the whims of rain and snow, while the lower half can rely on steady, legally required deliveries every year. So Mitchell says those lower states should be the first to make cutbacks.
We all have to be able to sell this, and it is really hard to sell something when there are winners and losers.
Meanwhile, the lower basin has its own big water demands in cities like Phoenix and Los Angeles, but also sprawling fields of crops. About 80% of the country's wintertime vegetables come from farms in the lower basin. Water managers say the next few weeks will be critical. They're trying to add their 2 cents before the federal government makes some potential changes to the river's current rulebook. Bill Hazenkamp is with the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California.
We really are focusing on this 45 days, and then if we're not successful, then you can ask me where we're headed then, because that's something I don't even want to think about right now.
But water managers will have to think about it, and soon. Elizabeth Cobley is a political science professor at the University of Nevada, Reno.
We're dealing with trying to respond to crisis while also thinking about long-term sustainability planning for the basin, and to me, that is creating so many challenges.
Cobley says there isn't much new clarity on where necessary cutbacks to water use will come from.
Even though we agree, yeah, this is a problem and we need to do something about it and it's not getting better, we haven't yet agreed on who's really responsible for doing any of that yet.
A longer-term plan could come by 2026, when the current rules for managing the river are set to expire. And while that process is just beginning, groups historically excluded from river management want their voices to be heard.
We want to have true and meaningful consultation. We want to really have nation to nation, but it really doesn't exist.
Sean Chapoos is chairman of the Ute Indian Tribe on the Uinta and Ouray Reservation. He and many of the other 30 tribes in the basin say they want more out of states that promise them a seat at the table.
It sounds good in rooms, but what happens on the ground, and for a person like me who's actually in that rumble, I always tell people, yeah, you're seeing a narrative that's not factual.
And while that negotiating table is being set, the river itself is only getting drier, putting the pressure on everyone who relies on its water to adapt. In Las Vegas, I'm Alex Hager.
All three of these stories are part of ongoing coverage of the Colorado River, produced by KUNC and supported by the Walton Family Foundation.
Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts.
This new year, LifeKit wants to help you succeed because everyone needs a little help being human.
It can seem so overwhelming. You're not alone.
Who can I commit to being?
If you want to do something, then just do it. Just take that first step.
Great advice every week. Listen to LifeKit from NPR.